Welcome. This is Design Your Work Around Your Ideal Life and How Alan Got Paid to Live in Paris Without Quitting His Job. And it's a second of the five classes that will teach you how to make the time, space, and money to live your calling. So how would you spend your ideal life? That's the question we're considering tonight. And for me, I got a taste of that last summer. We had a top floor apartment in Paris with, and if you were in the one of our girls' bedrooms, you could kind of lean out the window and just see the top of the Eiffel Tower. And the neighborhood was great. We were on leafy kind of boulevards like you think of in Paris. We were a 10-minute walk from the Arc de Triomphe, and there was a little plaza kind of at the end of our street where a bunch of streets came together, and there were, on every corner there was a different little cafe, and there was an ice cream shop and a bakery, patisserie. So just a kind of a snapshot of what that life was like. I was thinking back to one afternoon, and you know, I'm sitting in the desk in the our bedroom on this like antique 19th century desk, typing away on my computer with my clients and talking by Skype to some people back in Charlotte. Kitty's in the kitchen cooking our dinner, and there's no air conditioning, so the windows are open, and I can hear the cabs and the little mopeds running outside and the people speaking French. And then I hear one of my girls, "Hey, Dad," she's on the computer, and they found the Sims game there, and so they're playing the Sims, but it's in French. So she's like, "Dad, we're having a problem. Can you help me with the Sims?" And she said, "You know, we can't get them to have a baby." And so how do you say that in French? You know, so you know, all these parts of my life are all kind of going on at the same time, and I'm doing work, and I'm in a place we want to be, and I'm with my family, and my kids are experiencing this new language and learning cuss words in French and that kind of thing. And so I think that's the to me, that's a great way, a great realistic way to be able to live a life that you'd be really happy about later on. So we're going to talk about tonight in particular about how do you break down the kind of design your ideal work style, and then start to think about what would your ideal lifestyle look like. And I think you might be surprised at how not really far off it is maybe from what you do right now. And then I'm going to talk about how do you start to adapt your work to make space so that you can live this lifestyle that you really want to do. And so I had you guys do some homework last week, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in the beginning, but I'm going to save time at the end and where we can just kind of brainstorm and open it up and talk about anybody's situation or start to think about how to restructure things. So that's the plan for tonight. So again, just the logistics for the call. So as always, please ask questions or make comments at any time. Just interrupt. It's not interrupting. So, and I'm recording the call, so just use your first name and please introduce yourself so we know who we're talking to. If you want to mute yourself, you can use *6 and then just press *6 again to unmute. And then I'm recording the call and I'll put it up and send you guys the summary later on this week. So what I wanted to do, just real quick, go around and just everybody give their first name. And then if you want to, or you can think of something, think about one thing that you'd want as part of your ideal life. It can be anything, really. So, so Elizabeth, you want to go first? Get us kicked off.
Yeah, that'd be great. I have actually thought about my ideal life for quite some time.
Yeah.
Basically, I would have a small house on the ocean. I'm not quite sure where. I keep thinking Oregon, but I'm not sure. And
yay!
I would have my husband, of course, and my English bulldog, which I don't have yet, and probably my cat, which I do have. But I would live in kind of like a small little nice cute cottage like on a coast, and I'd be right on the beach and everything. And basically I would kind of mostly work from home off my computer. I'm not quite sure exactly doing what. I really like, I can do all kinds of different types of writing, like technical writing and procedures and copywriting and stuff. And I would work with different kinds of scientists all over the United States. And occasionally, maybe even like once a week or so or twice a week, I would go travel to a different scientist and figure out what they need help with, and I would work with them. And that way I'd kind of travel all over the country. And then now and then I would take a nice vacation out of the country, like with my husband for like a week or two, like somewhere else. So that's my ideal life.
That's awesome. That's a great. I could totally get an image of that in my head. That's really good. So A-plus for you, Elizabeth. Nobody else feel like you have to be as detailed as Elizabeth is right now, but it is fantastic. So who else is on the call?
This is Lauren, and I live in Oregon, and it's wonderful out here, Elizabeth. So
can I come visit?
Yeah.
Are you by the coast, or?
I'm not. I'm in Portland, but you can be at the coast in an hour and a half. You can be on the mountain in an hour and a half. So
actually, my dad's side of the family all live in Portland, so cool.
There you go. My vision is not quite as fully realized as yours, but what I realized thinking about it is, like Alan said, I'm a lot closer than maybe I would have thought before. What I really would like to adjust is, because I work part-time from home and I do some work that's okay, but I want to develop people, not products. So I need to make a shift using my same writing skills, marketing skills, organizing kinds of skills to do something where I feel like I'm making a bigger difference in a person's life. I'm helping people sell things right now, which is good, but that's the
missing piece.
Ideal life. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's see. Did somebody else call in who we hadn't talked to yet?
Yeah, this is Scott.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Alan. I guess my ideal life would be probably typified by freedom, or at least maybe I should say self-directed. Self-directed in terms of time and commitments and everything like that. Almost to the point where the commitments I make are the ones that I make. Where I'm kind of in charge of my time and my objectives as opposed to having them dictated.
Cool. So autonomy kind of thing.
Yeah. Good way to describe it.
Yeah. Okay. And Olivia's on a call, but I don't know if she can hear us or talk to us right now. So. All right. Well, for my ideal life, one thing that was always really important was people and meeting people and connecting with people and that kind of thing. And so I just want to give you kind of a taste of what's going on for me right now. I had a cool kind of day yesterday. There's an author whose name is Pamela Slim, who has a neat blog and has just published a book. And she's in Charlotte to do a workshop. And I know her, we've connected. And so last night I went over to a guy's house who was having a reception for her. So I met her. I met the guy who's having a reception who it turned out I had met probably 6 years ago. And then a couple of other really interesting people who were doing kind of innovative new businesses in Charlotte. So I got to connect with somebody in person who I really enjoyed meeting kind of virtually over the internet, and got to meet some people who I think I can do some stuff later on. So, I mean, to me, that kind of being able to work those kind of things is something in my life that was really important. So those are great. We'll talk more about how we start to work those in as we go through the call today. So what do you guys think about when you think about a kind of quote-unquote normal life or a normal work life? Does anything come to mind? So, do you guys watch that show Mad Men? Or do you know what it is?
No.
Okay, it's this show that's set in a 1960s ad agency in New York City. And the whole kind of thing about the show is it's very realistic, and there's a lot of detail about the way they dress and how they work and the kind of stereotypical roles of men and women in the office place and that kind of thing. But, the world's changed a lot. The guys don't wear hats anymore, and they don't wear, everybody doesn't wear gray suits and that kind of thing. But on the show, Don Draper, who's the main character, gets up and kisses his blonde wife, Betty, and takes his car down to the train station and rides into New York from the suburbs. And then he's at work all day, and then does the reverse at night and goes home and has dinner, and then has a little bit of time off on the weekend. But, basically he works 50 weeks a year, and he has a couple of weeks of vacation where they might go to the beach, and he probably plays golf, and the wife and the kids do something else, but everybody's basically kind of bored while they're there. And I think about how that show is kind of funny in a lot of ways because you look at how much has changed, but the world of work really hasn't changed that much. And I think that there's a lot of expectations about how we work, you know, in an office or in a certain amount of time a day, and that we, you know, we work most of the year and then we take time off or we totally don't work. And that's the time we're supposed to catch up on everything fun. But a lot of times it's just more of a time to kind of detox or rest up or just kind of get over the work we've been doing. So we want to, what I want to kind of help us break through is a different kind of way of thinking about how to blend the parts of our life. And so I was thinking about a visual image of that. And a lot of people think about work and life as balance. I mean, that's the kind of standard phrase, work-life balance. And you can think about a balance like the Lady of Justice or whatever, or kids playing on a seesaw. And so on a seesaw, you know, either way, you know, depending on what's up or down, somebody's got more, you know, more emphasis in your life, either your work or your playtime or your life or your kids. And, you know, a lot of times it feels like work is the thing that's dominating our lives and we can't find enough time for the other pieces. But I think that kind of balance thing is a little bit misleading because it kind of goes back to that old image of, you know, you do work and then you do play and never between the two shall meet. So I think a better sort of playground image is those little merry-go-rounds they used to have where you had little bars on them and you'd run, the kids would run and spin them fast and then you'd jump on and you try to hang on because if you get towards the edge, you know, you'll go flying off. And they don't have those anymore because they don't have those anymore and they don't have the little climbing things anymore because of insurance now, I think. But the thing I think about with those merry-go-rounds is, you know, if you get on the merry-go-round and you stand in the right spot, you're fine. Like if you're leaning up against the guardrail or if you get towards the middle, it's not that hard to stay sort of centered or, you know, without falling off. And if you take that analogy and kind of apply it to work and life, you know, if you just work for sure, you know, then it's like you have no boundaries and you'll just fly off of the merry-go-round. I'm sure felt that at different times where there's just so much going on with work that there's nothing else going on in our lives. So, but also if we don't have any work in our lives, then I think we don't have any real structure of life, and it's kind of boring. It's kind of like the wheel's not spinning, or we're standing right in the middle, and it's just too easy to stand there. So I think work has its place, but too much work is bad. But just like on the little merry-go-round, I mean, there are different places you can stand that'll hold you there fine, but still give you a chance to have some of the enjoyment at work. So that's kind of a picture analogy of what we're going to talk about. So let's talk about the first topic, really, which is identifying your ideal work style. And if you have the outline, this is point number two that I'm talking about now. And I said Jane Goodall and you. And Jane Goodall was an anthropologist who studied chimpanzees, and she's kind of famous, and she's got a foundation now, and my girls love her. And what she did was she just went to Africa when she was young, and she spent a couple of years just watching these families of apes. And gradually over time, she could get closer and closer to them, and she just observed how they lived. And nobody had ever really spent that much time before her and really kind of watching what they did and how they interacted. And over time, she became so kind of trusted by these wild animals that she could go be among them and live with them and interact with them. And so she really developed, you know, everybody's knowledge about what their life was like. And so how that's relevant to what we're talking about now is that when we start to look at how to how do we adjust our work style, or how do we start to do more of what we like, we almost need to come at our own lives and our own work like Jane Goodall. We need to kind of stand outside of what we're doing and look at it with more of a critical eye or a objective view of what are we really doing. And so that was the homework assignment for this week, was it meant to start that process for you all. And so the questions that I'd ask you to think about were, At your most recent job, what sort of things make you mad or frustrated, and then what sort of things make time just fly by for you? And the reason I ask those is that those are all really good clues to start to sort of objectively look at where are the sort of the good spots and the bad spots of your work, because kind of gathering that data, if you will, about yourself is how you can sort of take a problem that maybe feels really big, like I have to quit my job or nothing's right, and then say, break it down and say, oh, well, you know, this part of it's okay, but this isn't, you know. And so so I think about, well, let me stop for a minute. Does anybody want to share any of those things that you thought about relative to that? And I could tell you how you can use that.
I don't mind sharing. This is Elizabeth.
Okay.
What do you want me to share first? The bad
whatever.
Or the...
Do the mad first, I guess.
The bad. Okay.
Yeah.
There was lots of times in my last job that I had to work like 12 hours straight without a break, and it was just awful.
Yeah.
Not feeling really recognized for when I got things accomplished.
Yep.
There wasn't a lot of structure in place, which I love structure. I was kind of like, there was never a balance of work. Probably most people feel that way. You know, it's either I was absolutely stressed out with way too much to do, or I didn't have anything to do at all.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so those are a few bad things.
Okay.
And
how about things that you really enjoy doing?
I love learning new things. I love going to, I started going to like more and more meetup groups lately.
Yeah, cool.
Time just flies.
Yeah.
Because I'm interacting with people and I'm learning, and it's just kind of cool. I also love, whenever I've been doing like writing and researching, it just, hours just fly right by. So I know that's definitely something I like to do. Reading, like just, I'm interested in certain topics, just reading those types of things. There's certain types of video games that I like to play, like more like role-playing type. Like you mentioned The Sims, love The Sims.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and there's a few people in my life that are real important to me and certain interests that I like. I like going on, like I found something recently, a local college has like all these old archive photos online, and I kind of got lost in there one day just looking at them all, just really cool like old pictures of my city I live in, like from like the 1950s, so it was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great. And so I think from your examples of the, you know, not being recognized, not having structure, the things like that that are bad, you just kind of turn them around, right? That's the simple way to look at that. So, you know, you want recognition. You know, you want to have structure in your job.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other pieces, too, is like you like learning, interacting, doing things. It sounds like you like to interact with people, but you also like to do stuff by yourself.
Yeah,
you know,
kind of like kind
dig
of
into things.
Even
yeah.
Thing, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you like a lot of variety. There's a lot of things you like, and you like the process of learning about new things,
mm-hmm.
it sounds like.
Yeah.
So those are all like those are all components that you can start to build you know, this kind of, I don't know, map of your work situation, that if you had a perfect situation, you have all those. And then you can look at where you are today and where the parts are that aren't working relative to that. And your structure example is a good one. You know, I have a good friend who's worked with me for a while, and she was an accountant. And, you know, she was the most organized person I've ever known. She came to work at the same time every day. She took the exact same lunch break every day, and she would go to the gym and work out 3 days, you know, three of the days on the weekend, I mean, during the week on the lunch break. And then, you know, she left at the same time every day. And she did a great job, and her stuff – but it was real regimented. It was real the same. It was kind of the nature of her work, but she was also that way, and that worked really well for her. And then this week I was talking to another guy who has a friend who lives in North Carolina on the coast, and he's an oyster farmer, and he spends his whole day waist deep in water, you know, harvesting oysters, and he just loves it because he's out by himself, and there's nobody – he's outside, and there's nobody to mess with him. And so – you know, we've all got our ways of kind of organizing our lives or the ways that we like to work. And, you know, a lot of times we'll bump up against what work wants us to do relative to that, and it's different. And so what we're talking about is how can you kind of start to adjust your work to do that. Does anybody else want to share some of your ideas? And I'll come back to this at the end, too, when we get through.
I don't mind. This is Lauren.
Okay.
Things that maybe matter frustrated at work were things like I work alone and others create deadlines for me, and I'm here banging away on them, and then they're not helping me out to meet them. Like, I'm sending stuff and I'm not getting feedback. And because I'm not in the office to go see that, things are really busy, I don't really understand what's going on and why I'm not getting that kind of help.
Right.
And then bosses not treating my coworkers fairly sometimes. From what I could understand, that's annoying. Stuff that I do like would be working as a team in person with people generally. I do like writing, which you kind of do on your own, but if I start it with people, like give me some general ideas, and then I'll go craft it.
Yeah.
Finding images to use for the newsletter that I do, that is kind of fun, poking around on the internet. Interviewing people for the newsletter, kind of helping, like interviewing my boss, like to help her brainstorm and think through issues coming up. And then separate from the work that I've done, but some volunteer kind of work I've done, I used to, I have several times planned and led retreat recreation. So being up in front of the group, doing that whole thing. And one place that time really flew by recently that surprised me was I volunteered to work in the merchandise booth at the Portland Rose Festival. So I'm down at the waterfront basically selling T-shirts and Rose Festival pins and stuff. And it was a hoot. It was really fun. And the woman I was working with was great. And that's why it was fun. She and I were like overcome with all these people wanting to buy their pins. And and the cashier.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just got funnier. And 4 hours flew by.
Yeah, that's great. And you had to go with, too, what you said was like when your bosses don't treat your coworkers fairly, which isn't sort of directly at you, but those are the sorts of things that when you get frustrated, you get kind of mad about something. Those typically relate to something about your values. So, clearly you value equitable treatment of people and value people who treat people in a way that's fair. So that would be something that would be important to you and to address probably if you feel like you're in a situation where it's not that way. So, okay, those are great examples. Let's talk about a couple of other components of things that you want to build out on these. So you've got some ideas about some of the basics of how you work best and the parts of your life you don't like. If you don't like it, you can flip it around and say, so I do like the opposite. So one of the other things to think about is your kind of natural daily kind of rhythm. And for me, I don't know, some people are night people, some people are morning people. And what I've noticed about myself is that although I'm not really a morning person, the morning first sort of till 11 o'clock of the day every day is really my most kind of best time if I have to do something where I have to think, like if I have to prepare a report or if I have to write or if I have to, brainstorm something new. I do that really well in the morning, but if I don't do it then, there's really not another time during the normal workday where I'm that effective. So one of the things I learned about myself was that, if I let that time be used up with just kind of task-oriented work or emails or something else, and then try to do it in the afternoon, it's going to take me like three times as long to do it later on. And it's probably not going to be as good as it would have done if I'd spent, an hour or 30 minutes on it in the morning. And when I figured this out was I remember when I was at a job and we used Outlook for our calendaring system and it was all networked and you could see everybody's schedule and everything. And on Outlook, I guess the way it was set up in our system, when you had a meeting, it was blue on your calendar, and so we used to joke about our whole calendars being all blue when our whole weeks were taken up with different meetings and things. And I remember we had, I had several just kind of standard meetings that weren't that important that all were right across that top part of my day, which was the most important part of my time. So once I realized that, I sort of renegotiated a couple of those days a week and found out if the other people could move the schedule around so that I could get more done in that bit of time and then not have to try to make it up with a lot more time and effort later on. So being aware of your natural sort of rhythms is something that's really kind of powerful tool for making you more effective and feel better about that you're working your best way. And then other things to think about are kind of like Elizabeth was talking about. Do you like working with people? Do you like working with data, you know, instead of people? Or do you like working with things, like things you can hold, like a painter or a sculptor or somebody who likes to build things? Those are three different kind of components. And, you know, all of us have some piece of all of those. But I was talking about data and things and people. And then I was starting to talk about where you physically work is another factor. And so Lauren really kind of hit on that in her example of, you know, the difficulty she has when she's working alone, both because she likes to work with people, but also it's harder to get things done if everybody else is all together and you're not really there. So it can make work more challenging in that regard. But on the other hand, sometimes it's kind of nice. Like I remember for me, I kind of liked being away from the office sometimes because I had a lot of people like piling on and asking me to do things. And that didn't tend to happen as much when I wasn't in the office and I could focus more on what I really needed to get done. So, and then the other thing is like, where do you want to work in the world? I mean, do you want to be at home? Do you want to be in Paris like I was? And actually my Paris experience grew out of some little life experiments that I had done along the way. And I had been thinking, you know, what I was thinking is what a drag business travel is. And just to kind of explain what I mean by the drag of business travel, if you don't know, I was watching Jon Stewart the other day, and he was interviewing Dara Torres, who's a Olympic swimmer. She's got all these gold medals, and she's, I think she's in her 40s now, and she's still like awesome, still swims for the U.S. team. And she was talking about what it's like to be on the team. And Jon Stewart, you know, they travel all over the world for these world games, and they had just been to Rome. And so he was asking her, isn't that great? You get to go to Rome. And she said, well, it's not – everywhere's kind of the same, because it turns out that even if she swims only one event, and it's on Monday – under the terms of the contract that she has to be on that team, she has to attend all the other events. And they have a curfew at night. And so all she basically sees is the inside of this pool. And so she's in Rome, this beautiful place, you know, and so she gets done Monday. She didn't have anything else to do there, but she still has to come back and sit in that place all week until like the last night when she gets a couple of hours to go out. So, and that was exactly what my experience was with my work. I mean, I was going to really neat places, but, you know, you'd fly in, you go straight to a meeting somewhere, you go back to your room and do your emails, you don't get enough sleep, you get up, travel somewhere else, and, you know, before you know it, the week's over and you just want to go home. So I've been thinking about how could I sort of take that, like we're talking about, you know, how do you break that down and say, okay, what are the parts I like about that? Well, I really like going to these places and I like to travel. You know, what don't I like? I don't like being tired when I'm in places because I really can't enjoy it. And then I don't really like, too, the kind of choppy workspace because there's so much moving around and traveling. The meetings are important, but the rest of the time you don't get much done either. So then you have to make that up later on. So that part I didn't like about it. So what I've been thinking is, you know, what if I sort of found a way to combine visits or meetings and then just go and stay in one city and then kind of treat it like I live nearby. And so before I went to Paris, probably the year before, I set up a bunch of meetings in Europe, and I just, instead of going from town to town to town, I just kind of camped in Copenhagen, and I would just fly every day to where I needed to go and fly back. And so I didn't have to carry my luggage and do all that stuff. And so I kind of tried out what it would be like to live somewhere else just for 5 or 6 days of a work trip. So it made the work trip better for me, save my company money, and then kind of, you know, it started to build this idea that I could do something more with that. So that's an example of how you can do that. So any questions about the kind of look, you know, deconstructing your work environment and finding out what works for you? Okay, well, let's talk about your ideal lifestyle now. And I started really with the work first, because you know, the work, the way I look at it is, you know, if you have a job or you have a source of income, then you have a lot of room to be creative. You know, you can work around that, and we're going to talk about that more tonight. But if you don't have a job or you don't have money, you really can't do much fun stuff. You know, but at the same time, you know, if all you do is work and you never really think about what you do want in your life, you can't really start to fix your work to fit your life. So work has to be there, and you have to do the work the right way. But at the same time, you have to understand your lifestyle. So let's talk about that now. And you know, what I start with when I start thinking about what would be the ideal lifestyle is what is important. So what is important to you in your life? And that can be kind of you know, it can be kind of difficult to take. It's a really big picture question, you know, and I think most of us, probably our families are important to us. That's one thing, and that kind of thing. And so what I would encourage you to do is if you're starting from kind of what's important for your life, your family, you know, where you live. I mean, Elizabeth did a great job of talking about all the details of what she wanted to do. But for me, it's kind of like, you know, well, if my family's important, what are the parts of that are like most important of that? And so when I was working and traveling a lot, there was a couple of days a year that were really important for me not to miss with my kids. And one of them was this thing called the daddy-daughter dance at my kids' school. It's in April every year, and no matter what, how busy I was or whatever else, I would always make sure I was home that day and that there was no way I could miss that. And so I would schedule meetings around it. I would do whatever I had to take so that I could be at that event. And, you know, the girls would get dressed up. We got our picture made, and it was a whole big deal. And so I think part of starting to think about how is your ideal lifestyle is that, you know, it's not just that your family is important to you. Of course your family is important to you, and there's other things that you want to do in your life. But you need to take that down sort of one more level of detail and start to go, okay, you know, if I can't have everything, you know, what is important to me? What are the things that I really want to make sure that I do? Because if you can take it and make it into, you know, a few things that you can do, you'll start to see that you can really still have a lot of the parts of your life all going on at the same time, you know, all on this merry-go-round that we're talking about. So for the kids, it's like, it's the daddy-daughter dance. I'm always there on the first day of school. There's some things that I just always make sure I do, but because it's a handful of things throughout the year, it's not that hard for me to work that in. And then I would always try to be home on the weekends, even if I was traveling, and I always did something with my girls. So that was the example of the family that was important to me and how I could fit that in. The other way, so that's one way to go about it is, let's think about what's important to me, what are the components of my life that really matter, and then, you know, if I think about that one piece, like family, or I like to do, you know, be physically active, or I like to travel, you know, start to think about what of that is most important, and how do I make sure that a few times a year I can carve that out. So another technique to look at what's important in your life is to think about, is to do like more of it than you could think of. And so what I mean by that is take a period of time and just really, really spend a lot of time trying something out. So for me, I do like to travel a lot. And there was a period of time where it just worked out that we had a really kind of fun year. There was a trip with my family that my parents did, and then we had a mountain house with my wife's parents in the fall, and I think we had some friends getting married in 1 month, and then we had planned a big trip to Europe at one point. So there was a period of about maybe 12 weeks where we took these four really big trips. And kind of going into it, I'm like, great, I'm going to love that, you know, because I won't be bored, and we'll be doing all this cool stuff. Well, by the time we came to the last thing, which is the mountain retreat, it's like all I wanted to do was stay home. So one thing you can do is take whatever it is you love to do and intentionally do a lot of it. And what you'll find out is it's like, you know, if you love ice cream, you know, that first bowl tastes great, the second bowl tastes great, but at some point, the third bowl, fourth bowl, you're going to want to, you're going to have enough, and you'll start to learn that where's your threshold for whatever it is you want to do? How much is sort of ideal for you? And what I found that was, you know, if I could take a cool trip every once a quarter, that's about perfect for me. So I don't have to sit back and go, you know, gosh, I never get to travel, or I'll never be able to travel, you know, enough unless I quit my job. No, it's like if I just plan on doing something one time every 3 months, and it doesn't always have to be some big trip, then actually that'll satisfy kind of my ideal life. And then the other, so another component to think about in the life is also kind of the, another kind of rhythm. You know, I talked about the kind of your natural rhythm of your day. And with the rhythms of your life, have you guys ever heard of something called biorhythms? It's kind of like a horoscope, and it was really popular in the early 70s when I was a kid. And
I remember that.
Yeah, and I remember I loved stuff like that because I was like, oh, this is so cool. You could sort of analytically determine when you're at your best. And what it is kind of the basic idea is depending on what day you were born, your body supposedly goes in these 28-day or 29-day or 30-day cycles in terms of your physical and emotional and intellectual. There's all these kind of components of your life. And so the idea was you plug in your day, your birthday, and you'd look at, on any given day, you could look up where you're going to be on those charts and then orient your life accordingly. So it's a lot like astrology or something. So I had this little calculator that my dad got me. That's what got me into it, and I could calculate, you know, where I was on any given day. So I don't believe in biorhythms, but I do think that, you know, years and months and days also kind of have different kinds of rhythms. And so another thing about the ideal life is, you know, I don't think what we're looking for is for every day to be the same, unless that's something important to you. But, you know, factor in that, you know, there's different times of years. And so, you know, depending on what your job is, I remember my wife used to be an accountant for a company that closed their books in July, and it was a British company, and they didn't care that July 4th was our big holiday. She had to work every July 4th. And so she just knew that wasn't going to be a time when she could do a lot of family stuff, so we'd make sure we could do that at another time. Or, you know, in my old industry, we used to have a lot of trade shows that happened in January and February. So I kind of knew coming back from Christmas that I was going to be on the road a lot. But then it would open up kind of in the summer because the customers I was calling on didn't work. So that's another piece of your life that you can look at. You can kind of overlay that with your interests, the things you do, and then the kind of natural flow of what's going on with work to find gaps or places where you can do the stuff that you love and also make it work with what the requirements are of your job. So then the last thing I would say on your lifestyle is to kind of ask, you know, what are you missing out on because of your work life? So in other words, like, what would you do if you had all the time you wanted, or what would you love to do? And, you know, it could be, another example, when I was traveling all the time, one of the things that I missed that I really couldn't do, or I thought I couldn't do, was get involved in community activities, because I was never home during the week when those meetings happened at night, so I couldn't get into anything regular. But what I did was I found some things that were either project-based, so they were really short, and that it was something that I could do when I knew I was going to be in town, or it was something that met on the weekends that when I relatively knew I was going to be around. So I was able to work that into my life, this doing some of these community volunteer activities. And then the other one is I always wanted to be able to take my kids to school sometimes so I could drive carpool and listen to them talk in the back and find out what's going on, because that's when kids talk. So when I was in town, I would work out a deal with my boss where I could go and do that. And just come in late a couple of days or shift my schedule around so I could go pick them up. So the key to all of this is start to think about your life and really kind of taking these things that you feel like you're missing or you feel like aren't happening now that are important to you, and then really think about either, like I said, you know, try them a little bit. You know, you may not need it as much as you want, like the example of the eating too much ice cream or doing too much travel. You know, it may be that just getting a couple of key things in there is enough to go for a while. And the other thing is just to remember that life has rhythms, and sometimes you're going to be doing more of work or more of your life. So, but there's one last trick I kind of want to give you on this, and there's a book by a woman named Julia Cameron called The Artist's Way, and it's a book on creativity for really written for people who do art. But one of the great tools that she has in there is something she calls an artist date. And basically all it is she encourages people to take schedule time, like a day a week or like on a Saturday or once a month, to just go and do some art project. And so if you're a painter, maybe you would go and try some other medium, like go do pottery for a day or something, and just really go do that and go experience something new. And as a way to sort of rekindle the creative energy inside of them. Well, you can take that idea and apply it to trying out something that you want. So if there's something that's not happening in your life that you've always wanted to do, but you just can't do it because it has to happen during the day and you have to work during the day, or whatever the reason is you can't do it, you can take kind of a play day from work. So take off a day from work. And I've done this before, and it's kind of good to do it on a Monday, because then you're rested from the weekend. But just treat that day like you were living your ideal life, or you were independently wealthy and you could do whatever you wanted to do. And set, you know, schedule whatever it is, you know, whatever you think you would want to do that way, they do it. So if you want to travel, maybe you go out of town for the weekend and then spend that day doing something. But just use one of your vacation days or your sick days, and then go try it and see, does it feel like you thought it would feel? You know, is this as fun as I wanted to? Or am I kind of getting bored and it's kind of good that I have some time? So that's another good trick that I've used to help me just kind of really get a good handle on what do I really need in my life, you know, how much of it do I need, how could I fit it in? Because the more you start to understand the all these little pieces of your life, the things you want to do, the easier it is to start to do the things we're going to talk about in a minute, which is how do you adjust your work to be able to do that. So does that make sense to y'all, those ideas?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Do you guys have any questions about, you know, how to think about your life or what you'd want to do in your life? Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about then adapting your work to your lifestyle. And this is kind of where this is the fun part, because this is where you really start to see some changes that'll really make a difference in your life. So there's really two principles that you want to keep in mind whenever you're thinking about how do you adjust your work to better fit your life. And the first one that we use is that the value that you provide to your company is not a function of how much time you put in. And so a good example of that is, have you ever had like a waiter who was like super friendly, and, you know, they're really chatting you up and they're really nice to you and they spend a lot of time with you, trying to suck it up to you, like, and it kind of always kind of feels like they're trying to give a big tip. But then they don't, like, refill your water glass, and they don't pick up your plates after you're done eating, or they don't check in on you for a lot of time. And it always frustrates me when it happens, because, you know, they're not doing for me. What I really want is basically for them to leave us alone, but make sure our food gets there on time, that, you know, they fill our wine and they're attentive and they're basically just checking in on us whenever we need to be checked on us without us having to go flag them down. So that's a bad waiter. But then, when we were living in Paris last summer, there was a little cafe just right around the corner from our house called the Cafe Victor Hugo, and it had the little French tables with the little chairs where everybody sat facing outwards onto the square. And they had a, you know, big red awning, and at night you could go sit underneath it, and they had heaters out there. And there was this one waiter in particular that we always had when we went there, and he was a classic Parisian waiter, what everybody from America thinks about them. He was kind of snooty, you know, and he had the little starched white shirt and the black apron and very opinionated, a big guy with bald head, shaved bald head. And so, he, you know, if you tried to order something that he didn't think you should have, he would just say, no, you don't need that. You should get this other thing, you know. And, you know, he comes across pretty strong, but you know, what he really was he was really good at what he did, and he knew the good food. He knew what you needed. And the thing about him was, you know, while he wasn't like warm and fuzzy or smiling or anything else, and he was quick to tell you what he thought. He also was, he was right there when you needed. He'd come by with his little scraper and get the crumbs off after you ate the bread, and he'd fill your wine glass, and always had good recommendations for dessert and all that kind of thing. So here's this guy who's like the what you consider the worst waiters in the world, the rude Parisian waiters. But when I think about what values to me, sort of as me as the customer, or like in analogy, you know your company and what value you're providing to them, you know, that rude waiter was actually pretty good, and he didn't spend nearly as much time with us as the guy who spent a lot of time talking to us and interrupting our conversation, but didn't do the stuff that we really cared about. So value is more of a function of understanding what you can bring to your company, and then what's the best way or the most effective way to get that done in terms of time is what I'm talking about here. So value is not a function of the time you put in. That's the first principle. And the second principle is the one we've been talking about all along. It's that work doesn't have to feel like work. So when you're doing something that you like doing, it doesn't always, it doesn't feel like it's much work. And a lot of why we feel out of balance is more of a perception of how hard it is for us to get our work done than it is necessarily a reality of how much work we're having to do. And so an example of that is our neighborhood mailman is a guy named Gary. He's super friendly. He loves dogs, and he raises the same kind of terriers that we do. And so when we had a puppy, he always goes by and talks to her in the yard, and he taught us how to get her ears fixed right when she was kind of growing up at that stage. And it's almost like being in a small town, because he'll stop at the Brugger's where I have breakfast a lot of times, and if I'm over there at lunch sometimes, he'll run out to the car and out to his mail truck, and he'll give me my mail while I'm there, so I don't have to wait for him to come by our house a couple of hours later. And so Gary just loves what he does, you know, I never get the feeling that Gary minds that he's out there. I mean, he's got a job where we can go around and talk to people all day and just be this super helpful, nice guy. So, you know, you want to find places to be like Gary. And so work doesn't have to feel like work. And it can be that you're doing stuff that you don't like, or it could be like with me with that schedule where I was trying to do work at a time of day that just wasn't the right time of day for me to be doing that work. And so I was making it much harder because I had to go to meetings in the morning than I needed to. So, okay, second principle is work doesn't have to feel like work. So what do we do with those two principles? Those are the ways that we're going to kind of get more time for you, basically, and more energy left over at the end of the day. So how are we going to look at your job to do that? So two questions to ask. One is, what are the key parts of your job? And what I mean by that is, what are the parts that are most important for getting whatever the results are that you're supposed to get done? For me, it was, you know, what are the things that are most likely to sign up a new customer. It could be, you know, what are the things that I do that are going to, like, Lauren, if you're doing marketing, what's the most effective marketing piece I could do? And what are the parts of what I do that contribute most to that? So that's one. And then what are the things on the other side that you do sort of in quotes just because? You know, just because we always have meetings in the morning, just because my boss has always asked me to send in this report. You know, those are the key parts of your job, or the things you want to focus on. The things you do just because are things that that you want to find a way to basically not do. So the kind of visual for this is, have you ever seen I have three daughters, so have you ever seen girls get a new Barbie doll? And when a girl gets a Barbie, what's the first thing she does usually? Do you guys know?
Chops her hair off.
Yeah, that's a good one. It chops her hair off is one. And the other one is they always take all the clothes off. is what I've seen. And so really what we want to do is, with your job, is take all the clothes off your job. So you're going to make your job like a naked Barbie, and you're going to build it back up from the pieces, because you want to see kind of what she's made of, or what the parts are of your job that are really at the core of what you do. So if you want to find out this question about the value you bring to your company, the best way to do that is ask, you know, just ask your boss. But there's a sort of a good way to do that, and maybe a not so good way to do that. And the really good way to do that is to take the initiative to take a look at, like, what are your responsibilities right now? What projects are you working on? What, maybe there's some projects, maybe there's just some general responsibilities that you have, whatever it is that's on your, that makes up the things on your to-do list every week. And then I would go through and then rank those yourself by what you think are most important for your job. And not necessarily at this point what you like, but just for anybody in this job, this is the things they need to get done that are the most important. And then go sit down with your boss and have a conversation about with that piece of paper about that list. And then get your boss's feedback on how does what you do tie into what your boss's goals are and what the goals are of the company. And it says a couple of things. One is that, you know, maybe you're wrong and you're doing some stuff that you don't need to be doing, or your priorities are different, and you get that cleared up. And then the other thing is, you start to build kind of a relationship with your boss that's one of you being a problem solver, or you being the kind of person who's taking initiative to make a win for the company. Because it's not about you at this point. It's about your job and what you think needs to happen so that your job is successful, or what the company wants from you. So keeping that mind on. So that's a great way to start to get clear on, oh, okay, these are the things I need to focus on. So that's one step. And then how you use that, you take that back and say, you know, how can I make my job better? How can I make my job better? How can I do it better? And the two things that are always a winner for a company is save the company money or make the company more money. So anything you could do that you can tie somehow into either a, you know, even if you don't directly are in a position where you can do those yourself, you could contribute to a project that is doing that, or you could focus your efforts on something that does the most of that for the company. And when you have that list from your boss, you've sort of got leverage now to go say, you know, I need to spend more time on this project, you know, and now you're talking in their language. You're talking in the language of, you know, I've looked at how my travel schedule is, and, you know, if I go live in Paris for the summer, I've got two big deals that are going on in Paris, and instead of you having me spend 3 days to fly over there and back and spend, you know, $5,000 on a plane ticket, you know, I can go be there, and I can take a cab ride to their place, and it'll cost you 10 euros, and then I'll be home in time for lunch, you know. So that's like, to me, that's like a MasterCard ad or something, you know. It's like, you know, cab ride 10 euros, you know, notebook 2 euros, being home in time for lunch is priceless for me. But it's also good for the company because I'm saving them money and making a better relationship with a customer that matters. So does that make sense to you guys, how you start to sort of position yourself in a way that's not really about you?
Yeah.
It's about a company. I mean, that's the key to this, all these things around that. And so what you're doing is trying to understand what matters to the company in context of those two principles. And those principles are really to help you, because you want to create the value without as much time, and you want to create the work without having to have it feel like work. But you have to talk about it in the language of the company, what they talk about. Okay, so let's talk about barriers for a minute. And this is what this is the reality, right? Is that you know, you want to do something different. You have a really good idea, but it's really different than anybody's ever done before. Hey, I want to go live in Paris for a month, but not have to take any vacation and still work from there. You know, how do you make that happen? Well, so there's a couple. One basic question to ask is, you know, is there a good business reason why I should not do this? You know, is it for some safety reason or a security reason or accounting reason? You know, like, I used to hate to fill out expense reports, and we had to do a super detailed expense report, but we had to do it because they had to have the backup for that so they could do their taxes and everything. So I wasn't going to get away with just not doing them. But what I was able to do is say, sit down with the accounting department and say, what do you really need out of all the stuff that we do to do expense report? And it turned out there were several things that we were doing that didn't really matter. So I came up with a way that worked for me so I could spend a lot less time on that and then dish it off to some other people too. So that's just one small way that I worked on fixing a little part of my job that was something that was really felt like work and took a lot of time and wasn't adding a lot of value. So sometimes there are legitimate things and you can deal with those that way. But a lot of times there are more these issues of the sort of quote-unquote, just because we have to do them that way, we just always do it that way, we have to do it that way, whatever you want to say. Or the other one I used to get all the time is, well, it wouldn't be fair, you know, if you got to do this and then somebody else didn't do this. So how do you deal with that kind of stuff when it's that way? And when you do that, you really got – there's two general options that you've probably heard before. You can either ask permission or you can ask forgiveness. And so the asking permission, a really great way to do that is, you know, in the same context of, you know, what's in the best interest of the company, you couch it all in that light and say, you know, I think that if I were to work from home one morning a week, you know, I could make a lot more progress on, you know, this project that's number two on my priority list. And the reason is because when I'm here, I'm getting interrupted and I really need quiet time and I found that I'm more productive. Now your boss may say, you know, if you start working at home every morning, everybody's going to want to do that. And I don't want to fight that fight. So what you can do is say, well, let's do a test. Let me do it next week, or let me do it for 2 weeks. And then what you do is you set it up to where you can have some measurable results that matter to your boss about what you've done. To show you made progress. So that's one example of how you can sort of proactively approach making changes like that. And then the other way to do it, which I think works often better than the permission route, is the ask forgiveness route. And what this is really good is with stuff like regular meetings that have just gone on forever that are, you know, nothing good happens there and it's a waste of your time, or you know, things like reports that you have to do that you're not sure anybody looks at. And what you can do with that is just don't do it. And just don't do it for a while and kind of keep track of when you didn't do it. And then what you can do is say, if you ever get challenged on it, you just make sure that during that time you were working on one of your top projects that your boss already agreed with. And then you could just go back to your boss and say, hey, look, you know, I really needed to focus on these. And, you know, I wasn't at that meeting for 2 weeks and I don't think anything bad has happened. Can I just start skipping it? And a lot of times what will happen is nobody will ever say anything and you're just out of the meeting. So that's another good route to go on that. Do you guys have any questions on those? Or do you think I'm crazy? I really have done these and they really do work. But. Would that work for you? Do you think those were workable? How about you, Lauren, in your situation? They've lost Lauren. So anyway, those are some techniques to start to work around that. And next week we're going to talk a lot more about that. Yeah. Hey.
Sorry, this is Lauren. I had two mute buttons on. I didn't realize.
That's all right. Yeah.
I think that they're clever. I think they're for bigger company situations. I'm not stuck in certain meetings with certain paperwork that I'm having to do. But I did love the, you know, work it out so you can go to Paris and work from there to save them money. So that's what I'll be thinking about is.
Yeah, okay. That's great. Yeah, because you have the advantage of so I'll tell you some more about the Paris thing. So what I realized was that where I really added the most value was when I was face-to-face with a customer. And that when I was in Charlotte in my office, most of the day I was on the phone with people somewhere else anyway. So it really did not matter. There was no objective reason why I needed to be here. And so that was kind of the first realization. And then once I figured that out, it was just a matter of how do I make sure that when I am there that I'm able to be accessible during the times when people would need me, and, you know, just handle all those little details that would come up, but then make the case that I am going to be saving money and being there, get there with them. So the other thing you can do, too, is, Lauren, I was thinking like the times when you can't get work done or whatever because there are deadlines and you can't do it. Another way to deal with that is to make it more, make that problem more visible. So, you know, if there's somebody who cares about the deadline, and if there's somebody who cares about the deadline who's setting it, that's also the one who's not letting you get it done, you can just have a conversation with them to say, I'm going to slip because I haven't gotten this. But if there's like one person setting a deadline and there's somebody else not getting you the stuff, you can go back to the person who set the deadline and just find some neutral way to make everybody aware that, that things aren't happening that are preventing you from doing it so that you don't have to feel like you're in a crunch all the time.
Yeah, I think it's a changing priority on their part. They want a newsletter out by a certain day of the month, then they're not available to help with what needs to be in it or even just to proof my final draft to allow me to send it. So, and then later, if I get dinged that it didn't go out on time, it's like, wait a minute, that wasn't my fault. So it's those kinds of irritations. It's a small enough company that, yeah, I can have that conversation with them about
priority,
a good newsletter with more in it or something out on the 15th of every month and, you know, just help me work toward it.
Yeah. Okay, well, so what I wanted to do is talk more about any kind of situations you guys have or ideas you have or things you'd like to try or any of the things that came up when you started to think about the homework this week. Elizabeth, we can talk about how to get you to Oregon.
You know, I just thought of something. You know, like how you're talking about your job, Alan, how you were working for a company at the time, right?
Yeah.
And I thought about that, too. I'm like, I was just thinking, too, because before I, you know, because it's going to take a while for my business to get going and stuff like that. I was just thinking, I'm not sure how to look up companies or find companies that I could do that. You know, like I wouldn't have to be in a certain city every day, that type of thing. I could mostly work from home and then travel occasionally.
Yeah, that's right. Well, a lot of people, you know, I think you just have to look for those sort of the jobs and then find out what their policy is on that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are always, especially if you're in a company and you've been there for a while and you're kind of a valued employee, you have a lot of sort of equity built up with them of trust. I mean, maybe a little harder if you're coming new somewhere where, you know, or some companies just want everybody to be in the same place. But nowadays, a lot of places will let you work more remotely as long as you're willing to travel.
I know when I was in North Carolina last year for training, that Research Park Triangle.
Yeah,
area,
yeah.
I remember saying something about they were real big on, like, toward companies, you know, letting their employees work from home more often just to save on, you know, gas and everything else.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are more productive at home anyway because you can get the other stuff done in your life while you're here. So,
yeah. So any other suggestions that you might have? I don't know about my Oregon dream. I'm not quite sure yet. So,
yeah.
If you
go visit.
Yeah. If you want to work remotely with people from Oregon, you got to pronounce it with a G-U-N at the end. It's not Oregon. It's Oregon.
Okay.
Saving you from walking into that one. I walked into that one when I was new out here. So.
Yeah, I've been reprimanded for that, too. I always forget.
Well, and maybe you could get a gig, just something small, with somebody out here. I mean, it may be just time to kind of work the who-do-you-know kind of angle of things, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. You could take a trip out there. I know when my brother was moving here to Charlotte from somewhere else, he would just come a week a month when he was looking for a job or a couple of days a month and just set up meetings just as if he lived here to network with people until he found something. So that's a good way to get to know the area or the cities you might want to live in, that kind of thing. I don't know if you want to do it that often. But
mm-hmm. That's an idea.
Alan, that's a nice segue into what's going on with me. And I'll send an email to you and send you the long story of it. And if you want me to share, that's fine. The short of it is I was on my way to San Francisco. Had everything set up, that created this great project plan. Everything was, you know, working well. Had done my homework as far as rentals were concerned. And so anyway, I got up there, staying with a friend south San Francisco. And just a number of things happened that week that kept sabotaging my plans, so to speak, or just delaying my plans or making it tough. And so I'm sitting in a diner in the middle of the week in San Francisco, realizing that I am about to get from one wheel in Charlotte right back onto another wheel, and that I was really kind of forcing a result. So I kind of stopped and redirected and thought, you know, I've got 4 months severance. So, you know, I understand that I have flexibility that other people do not have on this call. But I kind of opened my mind a little bit and thought, you know, what would you really, you know, how would you really like your world to be? I mean, certainly not under a lot of pressure, and this, you know, you're not finding any good place to live. So I went on Craigslist, and I found a place in San Diego, downtown, living with this a great professional young woman who is social and, you know, is providing a lot of opportunities for me there. So I was just felt really lucky in that. But my point is that I now, you know, I just kind of turned it around a little bit, or just took a little right turn, and thought, what would it look like if you took this time to actually build the skills, build the life that you want to have, and then have a corporation be attracted to those strengths that you have as a result of creating the life that you want. So now I'm exercising. I found a place that has a new fitness gym. So I have, you know, access to exercise equipment all the time. I have a lap pool. The fact that I'm planning on traveling, one of the things I want to do with a new job is to travel. So
yeah.
I know that a corporation would see me as someone who can adapt well to that kind of schedule, that kind of life, and the fact that I also want to work with, I want to be the person that negotiates contracts and builds relationships. Well, the fact that I'm meeting new people constantly and I'm having to get results from them and I'm having to get them to build trust immediately in order to get what I want. Also, I don't know where I'm going to live next month, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Because I know that I will find a place. Also, you know, demonstrates my ability to be with change and to be with the unknown. And so it totally, then this call too has kind of honed in on that, you know, as far as redefining what you're doing, you know, or
yeah,
why
yeah.
you're doing it totally.
Yeah.
Like I thought, wow, you know what? You're creating your interview material right now, or you have a choice. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah,
and
definitely.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And
so,
you're following your
anyway.
Instincts, which is excellent, you know, because,
yeah.
You know, to be able to go to have a big plan like you had and then go, you know, this isn't right, and I'm headed right back to where I was. I mean, that's awesome that you're able to pull out of that no matter what happens, you know, whether you stay in San Diego or end up in San Francisco or whatever. But that's really great.
Yeah,
really
so
great.
I've been trying to do what you've been telling us to do as far as, you know, just kind of going with what just feels right or what I really want to do, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, and then build a life going forward that is a, you know, that's birthed from that.
Yes.
Instead of
yeah.
trying to choose the life and then making yourself fit that life.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, because
okay.
you'll, a lot of times what you think in your head is based on what you've done already, and maybe it's not, it's just, you just don't have enough knowledge yet. And but like you said, as soon as you got to San Francisco and started sitting there, you could tell something that you could never figure out. You couldn't have ever learned that from Charlotte doing your research, no matter what you did. And it wasn't until you experienced it that you started to do it. And now, because you took the step and you're already out there, you're able to do what you're doing now, which you probably never would have done. And who knows who you're going to meet right now or what's going to find out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's excellent. Well, send me an email, definitely. I'd love to correspond with you some more and talk to you some more about
that.
Olivia, Ellen sent me some information about a Portland meetup with this group, and I needed some of your guts. I drove all the way over to where the meetup was, and I walked in, and I could see from a distance that everybody was sitting down around tables, and there was nobody, like, standing up kind of welcoming people. And
mm-hmm.
I turned around and left. I couldn't do it. So I maybe vicariously now I'll get some of your guts to just walk into new.
Well, I think Alan showed her our numbers. If you would like to call me, I'll be glad to you know, share my experience with that. Plus, I've been in sales for, you know, 15, 20 years, so you just got to remember that they're feeling the same way. And I went to a meetup last week, you know, and it was the same way.
I tell you, I was telling Lauren this, that the scariest time of doing that is right where Lauren was. So, like, if you can – I still feel that way when I do new stuff, and I've done a lot of it. But there's always a moment, like right before you walk in or you got yourself psyched up. And a couple of those sort of mantras that I use for myself, one is like I think about, you know, am I going to – if I sort of project forward a couple of hours and I've done this, am I going to be glad that I skipped it or that I went? And a lot of times that's enough to make me go, hey, just go, you know. So that's one way. And then the other way is just to think, you know, look, I'm just trying this. And it might be a totally lame, and that's okay. And it doesn't have to, so you don't attach any kind of any big deal to it and just try it out. So, but that is the moment. You know, it's like if you can just bust through that moment and sit down and have that first conversation with somebody or whatever else, you'll get in the groove again. But it's like right on the edge that you can get held up.
This is Elizabeth. I've been nervous. I've been going to a lot of meetups lately. I'm probably nervous before every single one that I go to, unless I've already been to one before. And I do the same thing Ellen suggested exactly. I'm like, well, if I skip, I'll feel bad. And I wish I had gone. So
So I guess it's like, don't feel bad at all about that, Lauren. I mean, totally, you went. I mean, you've been through the worst of it. So go again, you know, try it again or bring a friend or something. So I've been to a lot of things where people will, like, bring a spouse or somebody else with them for that reason.
Yeah, the bring a friend thing would totally have gotten me over it.
Yeah, definitely.
If I'd had one other person, but it was just that.
And you know what I found out, Lauren? That guy, Chris, who was organizing that, is like a real introvert, and he's really kind of shy. So that probably explains why he wasn't taking more of an initiative to engage people and bring them in. You know what I mean? He just didn't know how to do that probably. So.
Which is a good thing for people to know about themselves. You know, if you're
Yeah, totally.
People around you that can, you know, fill in for that for you.
Yeah.
So. Cool.
Great. Well, is there anything else I can help you guys with tonight?
No, just thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, great. I'm glad to. And thank you guys for participating and sharing and everything. That really makes it a good call.
That's really good. Thank you.
Yeah, so next week we're going to talk about how to get paid a bonus for working less. So this is more, this is like, if today was like the 101 class on how to renegotiate how you work, next week is like grad school. I'm going to give you some really good ideas on how to do some things that are different. So.